Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's cast, we're going to finish up our coverage of the Grey Knights, or really just start it, because the last one was just all backstory.
But say, awesome. We got nowhere on that.
We mentioned Grey Knights, I think, two or three times.
Also, I'm going to give John props. John isn't in charge of, most of the things, and I show up and go, I know a bunch. But he sent his initial draft, and I didn't even realize how passionate you were about Grey Knights, and it's going to carry over into
Grey Knights are great. Grey Knights are cool as hell because of what they are. There's some messed up bits to them, but Grey Knights are super cool. Actually, kind of easy to paint too if you get the right spray paint. But anyway, before we begin, as always, please like and comment in the cast. We are growing really rapidly right now. Hashtag Space Marine 2. But anyway,
cinematics are so good.
Yeah, it's really is. The game's pretty good.
If you haven't seen, I'm citing a server. Immediately segueing into it. If you haven't watched the cinematic with Marnius Kalgar deciding he's going to YOLO swag into a chaos rift while a Lord of Change is standing there, why do you not love 40K?
But I will say, back to the topic at hand, for those of you who are liking and commenting, it really has been incredible. As I said before, I read every single comment because I actually have to publish them. So I go through all them. I do laugh pretty hard at quite a few of them. So thank you for leaving the comment, and thank you even more for writing a funny one. Anyway, we also have a Discord, as we've said numerous times. The link is in the show notes. We made this Discord a while ago. It's now a lot larger than we thought it would be, which is great. It's designed for all of you listeners who not just are fans of our show, but are fans of lore in general. We've got channels in there discussing literature, painting, gameplay, lore, everything, even obviously video games. So if you're looking for a place just to kind of interact around 40K lore, please come in. It is completely free to join. We make $0 off of it.
And we love having you in. The thing is, John, you're 100% right. It's 40K and around.
Yeah.
It's very around. It's, hey, do you like sci-fi and fantasy at all? Someone's talking about something in that general.
We've done a couple of days on Fallout, I think.
And yeah.
Fallout just always comes up eventually because I have a Fallout tattoo. So yeah, I'm a big fan. Anyway. So moving forward, though, we also, in the show notes, have a link to our Patreon. This is something that if you like the cast and you want to help us kind of do more with it, that's what the Patreon is for. Thanks to Patreon, we've hired an audio engineer who not only edits all of our future casts, but actually also has gone through and has remastered the old ones. So for those of you who are just joining now, it used to sound a lot worse.
I've gotten several emails about it.
Yeah, like a lot worse. That's because of the Patreons. We now are looking to actually expand our way into YouTube. And so that's where the next kind of chunk of Patreon money is going into, is helping us get, be able to do casts, edited casts, and potentially even live casts into YouTube along with the website. So for those of you who've contributed to the Patreon, thank you so very much. We hope that the contribution you can hear is valuable. For those of us who want to help us out more, please do it. And for those of you who don't want to, still a free podcast. Not changing that anytime soon. So lastly, though, for those of you who want to play 40K, Brad is a coach. I finally went down 30 years of playing the game. How long has it been?
It's 26.
So yeah, a better part of 20 of three decades.
I've been ranked for 24 of them.
Yeah, Brad, 25? Been playing a lot of 40K over the years, but not just as like a hobby. As a hobby, he plays this very at a high level. So for those people who are kind of like getting into 40K and they're saying, hey, I really like this game, but I want to know more about it, Brad's available for a coach. One thing we haven't mentioned before, he's also available for a coach for if a group of friends are doing it. If you've just got a friend group who are trying to play 40K, Brad loves coaching.
100%. I'd love to. I like to do basically seminars, coach, just meetings, basically. Yeah. And we can work out that for sure.
It's a really great way. So if you've got like a little hobby group that you're playing in and you guys are all saying, hey, how do we do this better? Reach out to Brad. He's actually really good at that. And if you want to reach out to him, you can email him at
oldmanbrad40k@gmail.com. Also, a lot of people I had to respond to late because whatever reasons, I don't do technology well. And I put everyone that emailed me into spam for a little while.
You guys have no idea how bad we are at technology. As I said, twice. twice I've forgotten to hit the record button on our cast. Another time I forgot to turn the microphones on, and Brad can't figure out Gmail. So we're just rocking.
I couldn't figure out how anybody wasn't responding to me after I messaged them.
Yeah.
And it's because they didn't
go. Yeah, so rocking and rolling. So anyway, it's going to be more awkward. We're doing the AdMech cast, and we're talking about, man, we just, Brad and I just keep praying to the machine spirit and hoping something would work.
I've done all the prayers.
Exactly. Well, we've lit the incense. Why isn't it just working? Oh, on button. Got it. So anyway, on to the cast. So let's go. That's the Grey Knights. Grey Knight lore is very character and event focused, whereas we think about, like, you know, a chapter doing a great big thing. The Grey Knights are kind of, they're very strategic. They would deploy in small groups to take care of one incursion, and they would disappear because they're a secret. So we have more of a record of, like, their deeds than of their day-to-day function. We're like, we know a lot about what life on Fenris is. We know a lot about, like,
it's also what it is to be a space wolf, the bees, to be a salamander. Those are a big deal in tradition. Grey Knights traditions are, we don't talk about Fight Club.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very much so. Very, very much so. So today we're going to kind of be telling the story of Grey Knights, both through some of their key members and also some of, like, the events that they've taken part of. But let's start off with kind of the beginning, which is Titan, because we forgot to mention this last time, because whatever.
I mean, that's where he sends them. So,
yeah. So every Astartes chapter has a home base. Some of them have been split in half. Others have been ravaged by demons. Some
and maybe one of them gets sent somewhere in time for 10,000 years.
Probably. Exactly. Yeah. So not always a great situation, but just like all the others, the Grey Knights have a home, and it's Titan, which is a moon of Saturn, which I do believe on an early cast I called a moon of Jupiter. My bad.
I mean, they could have just used Europa and just
been easier. It is kind of interesting. So Titan's kind of a cool thing. There's no explanation why Malkador picks this moon on Saturn. But what we do know is by the time we get to modern 40K, it's both the moon on Saturn of Titan, but also a bunch of the other moons of Saturn all get absorbed by the Ordo Malleus. So this becomes like the hub of the Ordo Malleus is the moons of Saturn, which makes no sense, but okay.
But the thing is I do want to put on this, because we talked about this in a previous cast about the Imperium. Mm-hmm. When we say they take over moons, we don't mean, hey, man, we have this little base that we launch stuff from. No, the Imperium doesn't screw around. When they decide this rock is ours, what are we doing with it? We're only doing this
thing.
We're
putting every gun that you've ever heard of and every piece of metal on it. It is a full moon fortress.
How far can we drill into this and make more stuff inside of it? We're doing that.
But I like kind of the way Titan comes into being. So Malkador decides that he's going to build this secret base on Titan.
Aaron, sorry. No one can see it as usual, but I'm getting my chi, because we're going to talk about it in just a second. But, like, Malkador is a genius.
Yep.
But some of his plans are Dr. Evil style, dog.
Oh, they're just weird. And they're funny.
He legitimately decides he's going to make Titan's a huge moon.
Yeah.
He's just going to make this moon base that they're going to do everything on. He's not going to tell anybody, but he's also not going to tell. He's not going to tell anybody. He just has all the space truckers.
So this is genuinely hilarious. So he's building this moon base on Titan. This fortress on Titan. And he does an entire servitor army, which makes sense because servitors have no mental function. We're going to cover them on AdMech. Don't worry about it. I've already written the episode. It's coming up soon. But the idea, which I assume he's going to murder them all afterwards. So he's got a plan. I can build the base and no one building the base is going to know where it is. But I still have to get stuff there. And the Imperium is nothing but a bureaucracy. So he has to figure out a way to get all of these supplies to a moon base, to build a moon base. Again, and does it an amazingly Malkadori way.
Yes.
That's how I describe this. I'll turn him into a verb.
Malkador just puts down, hey, we're sending this, but I need 400 billion tons of steel for bathrooms.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So he
somewhere else.
Well, that's what's funny. He doesn't go to the trouble of properly laundering this, where he like creates like false bills of lading or stuff. He just tells a ship that's going from point A to point B to take a left turn and go to point C.
Well, he just takes giant amounts of resources and he goes, "You're going to Titan instead." And the guy's like, "It says that I can." And he's like, "I'll kill you." And
yeah, I'm Malkador.
Cool. Right. I guess
I'll drop this thing off here and then leave and don't tell anyone about it. I genuinely believe that there were numerous like ship captains who dropped stuff off on Titan, left Titan, and then were murdered.
Oh, I don't think they even left Titan. I think they dropped it off and went, we're all getting shot. Damn it.
As soon as the ship just cleared orbit because it would have taken up space in the landing dock, they just, that's when the assassin pops out and just stabs him and goes on to the next one.
This is like so wildly Coyote Acme Roadrunner obvious.
It was just stupid. And so, of course, this doesn't work the way he thought it would. And this is about to get very Malkadory. So there's a great story about this. There's an administratum scribe named Tallery. Tallery is an administratum scribe who just keeps noticing that there's a discrepancy in the shipping, which I should have mentioned. This is all going on during the Horus Heresy. So what she looks at is she sees a bunch of like siphoning of supplies being taken to a moon where there is no Imperial presence on. And she does what most people would say, "Oh my God, I've just uncovered the traitors. The traitors are here. I have to go do 100%. Something about this."
And they're clearly siphoning our supplies away to set up a base to stage to kill us.
For a sneak attack. And so what happens next? Well, then all of a sudden, she starts getting pursued by like agents who are trying to kill her. Because again, that's what Horus would do, obviously.
Well, also, it was agents, not to be confused with assassins.
So Malkador is obviously, I do want to call this out. Malkador is the master of assassins.
Yeah, exactly.
As we said last time, he's the master of assassins.
Assassin, this book, this would have went and credits.
He could have made one comment to one Calidus and Tallery would cease to exist.
And
Calidus would now be Tallery typing in the things of nothing to see here, don't worry about it. But instead he sends his agents.
He sends Ted.
Yeah, who are bumbling morons like any bad action film.
This story is really cool. The agents
I'm totally
ruining
the story, and I realize. Well, this.
I know, but like it is funny because the agents that get sent get thwarted by a scribe.
Yeah,
Tallery's just a scribe.
Yeah,
like working the BMV.
Yeah, God. Actually, I did have someone from Germany. Like, it's called the BMV. Fine, in Germany, it's the BMV. You guys, Germany and Ohio. But anyway, the whole point is again, this is a. What this really is, it's a movie, unfortunately, where somehow
she has a meet cute with Garo.
The accountant is able to like hide from the super agents of Malkador.
I mean, I've seen this movie. It has Denzel and Julia Roberts.
Oh, I was gonna beat it down a lot more and do more Steven Seagal.
Oh, come on, man. I did Pelican Brief and you're gonna go Seagal.
Yeah.
You know what?
I think it's that bad. I think the plot's that bad.
Screw you. I went with Pelican Brief, which is, again, old enough.
Yeah, it's still not good. All right. So anyway, what is funny is that because, as with all things in GW writing, in her running from these bumbling moron agents, she runs into Garo and tells Garo what she's uncovered.
Like immediately spills the beans to her. But the best part is
Paladin,
also... This is a random stranger. And she's just like, screw
it. Random stranger who, again, at this stage, is working for Malkador. He has Malkador's sigil on his body. Anyway, so she tells him this. Garo immediately goes, "This makes complete sense. That is exactly what Horus would do. Let me help you. First, I'm going to kill all these agents, by the way.
Let's recap, though. Garo has had some real issues getting here in the first place. Yeah. Shit has been going down. He's real involved in the Horus Heresy right now.
Yeah, and so he thinks this scribe has uncovered one of the greatest threats to Sol.
It's a plot, internal plot.
He then dispatches the people pursuing her.
Instantaneously, by the way.
To be fair, these are people who couldn't catch an accountant and are now fighting
an elite space marine.
Elite space marine who just goes, all of you dead. But okay. next part of my day.
So who's actually chasing you? You're like, those guys. Oh, my bad.
Yes. Like, and those, you know, those guys
that you accidentally killed.
Yeah. It's like, they're like, oh yeah, I was going to make the reference of Overeem in a nightclub. if you guys don't know what that is, Google Alistair Overeem brother nightclub and you'll get what happens when, why you don't beat up random strangers in a nightclub. His brother might show up.
It's 270 pounds.
Yeah. Multi-time glory kickboxing champion. Yeah. It didn't end well. Anyway. So anyway, upon arriving on Titan, Garrow and Tallery find this massive fortress monastery that's full of weapons they've never seen, technology they've never seen.
They legit roll in and find the Death Star.
Yeah, and full of, you know, servitors who can't speak, won't speak. So they're, again, this obviously is the work of the Traitor Legion. So let's go rush up to the absolute top of this building and confront whoever's in charge of it, kill him, and save the Empire. And again, the whole way between entrance and top of the building, Garrow is fighting for his life nonstop till he gets to the top and it's just goddamn Malkador.
Who also is like, I was going to take the elevator down and talk to you, but I just didn't.
Yeah. By the way, Malkador's a dick about this. He immediately starts, he psychically forces them to kneel in front of him.
For no real reason.
Begins yelling at them. Garrow also never identifies himself. Garrow tries to kill him because Garrow is convinced, again, this is a super psyker from Horus, until Malkador finally just gets annoyed and is like, yeah, this is the most important project in the entire galaxy.
He's Do you not know who I am? Just, yeah. And this is why you and the Emperor are friends, because, again, an email would have cleared this all up.
And he tells him that this moon base is going to be the bulwark for humanity against a new threat, and that, you know, they effectively don't worry about Horus. The loyalists are going to defeat the Traitor Legion, but after that, the galaxy will be forever changed. And that's why this is so important, which is not the end of the story, because it then gets worse.
Oh, wildly worse.
Malkador then makes the comment, because you might be thinking, wow, Malkador's being kind of a dick right now. And I'm going to tell you, nope.
Nope. Well, yeah, I mean, you're not, whoa. Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
But wait. There's more.
It's going to look better in hindsight, because then Tallery calls out Malkador and says, well, it is this secret so valuable, it's really worth killing me, and anyone discovers it, to which Malkador's comment is, yes, quote, 100 times over.
Whoa. Not the quote. 100,000.
100, right. 100,000.
I needed you to make sure he belittled Tallery's life so much more.
And then he, at this point, says, this is so important that it's a secret that can only be held by someone who has absolute loyalty to the Empire. Sorry, the Empire. I mean, it's been Star Wars. Absolute loyalty to the Emperor. At which Tallery says, well, I am one of those, and of course I'll keep the secret. And Malkador looks at Garrow and tells him to cut her head off.
Which is crazy, by the way, because Tallery gives an impassioned speech.
Yeah.
And Malkador goes, oh, you're done? Cool. Garrow,
cut her head off. And Garrow refuses.
Well, because Garrow's not a giant dick about things.
And also, he's not a custode.
Well, yeah. Well, the other thing is that between the two of them, they just go, hey, how about we pause for 2 seconds and go, hey, man, why don't you have the person that found the stuff out just fix your shit?
They don't say that. That's the best part. That would be a better story if they'd sat there and pleaded for, here's how I can help you. Instead, Malkador goes, oh, you're not going to kill her? Fine. All right, you, Tallery, you're now in charge of this whole moon base.
True.
Make sure it works correctly and then leave.
Sorry. In my mind, that's kind of how the thinking was.
He was just a dick and went like, fine. You don't have to kill her, but you're never leaving this place. You're totally dying here, by the way. And make sure that all these logistics work, because you're good at that stuff.
Like, clearly we're doing a bad job.
Yeah. And he just leaves.
Yeah. And goes, figure it out. You're the accountant now. Yeah. Also, here's my 47 illegal enterprises. Make all these legal. Goodbye.
Yeah, bye. And by the way, good luck with all this. By the way, there is no record of Tallery's existence after this story. So it's entirely possible that Garrow, as soon as he left, Malkador just shot her in the head.
He He goes, I was just joking, guys. Yeah,
nope. Like, she may have died instantly after this. We have no idea. She never appears again. So anyway, fast forward a little bit. By a little bit, at this point, we're talking a couple months, by the way. Horus reaches the soul system.
This is where shit gets good. Come on now.
This is cool. So at this point, Malkador then takes the 8, as we talked about last time, people who are going to become Grey Knights, 8, because Garrow was going to be the 9th and refused because he said, so I don't get to fight Horus? No, I'm not going.
I mean, Garrow's got some pent-up hostilities. Yeah,
Garrow, to be fair, I mean, he's the only one who actually said no, but there's a bunch of others who were part of the Knight Errant and weren't part of this 8, which I'm like, yeah, I think you kind of knew some of them were not going
to
go.
I mean, Garrow's got real reasons to stay, though. Yeah. He's had some shit happen to him.
Yeah, he wanted to go punch Horus. Not a great idea. But anyway, so Malkador warps them all to Titan and then does this weird thing where Titan disappears. And it's not, depending on the edition you read, it moves around a little bit. In my opinion, in the current edition of the writing, it goes into a pocket dimension of the warp. At a different time, it was almost like the webway it went into, but because of the time thing.
Originally, it was supposed to be moved out of time and space.
So let's move now on to the first of the Grey Knights. So as we said, there were 8 Grey Knights who went over there. And the part I want to talk about with Grey Knights is now we're going to dive into what a Grey Knight is, because these 8 set the backbone for what all would become thereafter. So first off, their prior lives no longer existed.
Which is, I want to back on this because Death Watch grabbed people from everywhere and made a big deal about where they were from.
Yeah, you still kept your original legion on your pauldron. Grey Knights, not only do we get rid of your original legion, not only do we get rid of, like, you actually change your name, yes. We're going to change your gene seed. We're going to get there in a minute.
But the thing is that you are new. Yeah. Also, this process makes being a Marine look
we're gonna dive into this for a second. So now, before we get into, let's talk about the original 8 Grey Knights. And I'm gonna say this openly to all of you listening. I did a lot of research into this, and there is a lot of conflicting. So if I say something, if we cover something shortly here and you say, hey, that's not what I remember, drop it in the Discord. I could have gotten it wrong. There's only so much lexicanum and, you know, Reddit and whatever clicking I can do before I just go, all right, this is enough of consensus.
But it is, you know, all I have to say is, as being the old guy here, 8 guys did a 80s montage video.
Oh, yeah.
Became Grey Knights.
They did. Oh, that's very much so true.
Like 100%.
Let's go through them. So the list of the original 8 is Iannis is the first one who changed his name, who became Giannis. So Iannis with an I, well, also, Giannis with a J.
He's also, it's Giannis.
It's Giannis. Well, no, so we're going to cover him in a second. He's the first Grandmaster of the Grey Knights. So
from the Thousand Sons.
Yeah, Thousand Sons. The next one
I'm saying it's a big deal because of the fact that every Grey Knight is a Psyker.
Yeah. And every Grey Knight comes from a different chapter, and a lot of them are traitor leaders.
Yep.
So we'll go through them. So the next one is Namian, who was a Dark Angel, who became Epithemius. You have Fel'Zarost, who is a Night Lord, who becomes Chiron.
Which also, that's a downgrade in name.
Yeah, it's fine. Tylos Rubio, who is an Ultramarine we talked about last time, becomes Koyos. Balsar Kurthuri, it was a Raven Guard, becomes Ogen, whatever.
Which is a name upgrade.
Yeah. Severin, who is a Luna Wolf, becomes Iapto. Fyodor Stromgren. Guess who? It's Space Wolves. Becomes Jotun.
Yeah, you got to say it right. Jotun.
Yeah, to be honest, I love Space Wolf lore. I hate Space Wolf names. Anyway, they feel like they're trying too hard. All right. And then the last one is Vardis Ison, who is a Blood Angel, becomes Satyr. So each of these guys, as Brad said, were incredible psychers. And then they were also probably the 8 most loyal members of the Imperium. Well,
this is a big deal because these guys are told from the get-go that everything, you don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
You don't exist, but also they were trying to change them at a base essence level, effectively.
So the weird thing about this, I kind of laugh at, is that so they were teleported to Titan just before Horus enters the galaxy. And then they were just kind of told, hey, fulfill this mission for the Emperor. they have, that's it. That's their entire thing. They just get sent into this pocket dimension and it's like, all right, here's your mission. And I'll tell you what they were sent in there with in a minute.
But do good.
But the first thing I want to jump into is, because I just like this story. So if this doesn't seem to make a good flow sense, it's because I want to tell this story and I wedged it in here in the middle of nowhere.
Well done, John. Well
Cause,
done.
Because the story of Iannis is amazing. And Iannis is like, it's just, this is badassery on badassery.
I think you meant to say Giannis.
Giannis, fine. Well, no, because we start with, he was originally Iannis. True. So let's start with Iannis.
We'll be right back after a quick break. It's time to accept it. The holidays are upon us, and finding gifts for people is never easy or really fun. Luckily, we at the 40K Lorecast have a new sponsor, which will help you make your holiday shopping fast and easy. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Add some personalization to your holiday shopping with Uncommon Goods. Did I go there and buy the game Fart Bingo? Yeah, I did. Is it for my child to play with his friends? We'll go with, yeah. At the same time, I was able to get a cocktail smoker. So yeah, those are probably all for me. Anyway, that's what's great about Uncommon Goods. They have uncommon, get it, collection of items you can choose from, allowing you to pick up a fun variety of items this holiday season. You'll find thousands of gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. So, shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/40klore, 40klore. That's uncommongoods.com/40klore for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
So Iannis ends up becomes Giannis, who becomes the first grandmaster. So what would you want the first grandmaster of the Grey Knights to be? Probably incredibly loyal. And proving so over and over again. An insanely powerful psyker is probably good.
Well, he has to also have a deep understanding of chaos because, again, your mission is to fight
chaos. And you're in charge of the people fighting chaos.
But you also have to be resilient against the sway of chaos.
And so in this scenario, you're going to go with someone who not only you think is those things, but has proven he has been.
It has to be.
And there's only one person, and we'll get to that. That's actually, we're going to do that right now. So turns out, as we talked about before, about 50 episodes ago, actually, which we've been doing this cast longer than I thought we ever would, to be honest.
thank you.
Yay.
Who knew?
We talked about Space Wolves, in Custodes and Sisters sacked Prospero and Magnus gives himself over and Prospero becomes this like shadow world as a result. So before, because it wasn't, it actually never, it didn't enter the war, but it wasn't.
Let's continue with the alliteration. The bigger thing on this is the Primarch of the Thousand Suns was shattered.
Yeah, was shattered.
Psychically shattered.
Yeah. So his shards, we talked about last time, his shards were all over the galaxy. More on that in a second. When they sacked Prospero, though, not every Thousand Sun was on Prospero. They had fleets who were all over the place. One of them was a guy named Revwell Arvida, who was this.
Wow, you destroyed that.
What?
Continue.
We'll go with Arvida. Fine, I'll go with Arvida. Revwell.
I'm not even going to tell you what the actual name is. It's in an audiobook.
Oh, yeah, which I didn't. Surprised I didn't listen to it. All right. Anyway. God. I love doing that. There's nothing better than getting Brad mid-wine. Oh. And I make a joke so it goes through his nose.
That burns so much.
It's all right. Your head probably hurts now anyway. On principle. So Arvida was maybe the most powerful precog outside of Ahriman, or maybe even better than Ahriman, in all of the Thousand Suns. So he's off-world when the attack happens. And all of a sudden just notices that, hey, I can't hear from Prospero. Not like our communication is being jammed. No, it's silent. Yeah, I'm a psyker and it's silent.
Well, it's not even just silent. I can't touch the area from where the planet is. It's unpenetrable, basically.
So he decides to abandon their current mission and shoots back to Prospero and teleports down to the surface. At which point everyone he's with gets murdered by world leaders who are hunting down all their survivors on the surface. I forget why, but they just are.
It was more, well, world leaders are dicks.
Yeah, that's what it was.
That was. There's more to it than that, but it really just boils down to that.
Fair enough.
So he's like, hey, man, these guys are having problems. We should kill them. You're like, but why? We should kill them.
Just sounds fun to me.
Okay.
So he's on this planet by himself until the White Scars arrive. And as we said before, Jagadai Khan was torn as to what was he wanted to figure out what was going on in the heresy and decided to go to Prospero with the White Scars and teleports down to the surface of Prospero, gets separated, blah, blah, blah. But where this is, those of you who remember the story, his rat team that was with him gets separated and they get overwhelmed by warp creatures because their bolters just won't kill these things because they're you know, beings of the warp. And they are pseudo in the warp.
Also, I was going to say, they're also effectively, they are pretty much.
Yeah, they're in between the Materium and the Immaterium. I mean,
this is the first time because we now have the Eye of Terror and everything. You're basically, we haven't really had to deal with, hey, what happens if I stand 1 foot here and 1 foot here? What happens? You're like, things are going to get weird for you.
So just before they were all going to get killed, a Thousand Sun Psyker popped up out of nowhere and just destroyed these beings.
With force lightning stuff.
Yeah. That was Arvida. And he uses these powers to Arvida's incredible power, by the way. So not only does he just, he kills them in this time, and then they start just wandering around the surface of Prospero, where the White Scars point at a demon and Arvida just kills it.
He just keeps nuking. And the rest of the time that they're walking around, he's effectively popping heads.
Yeah, and they're just like, oh, there's another one. He's like, all right, I got it. Like, geez, can you guys do anything?
They did nothing.
This, fast forward a little bit, they meet back up with Jagatai. Mortarion and Jagatai get in a fight with the Death Shrouds. Arvida and the White Scars help actually win this battle. But then Mortarion screws them by just leaving them alone on the surface. Meanwhile, the White Scar Legion in orbit has half turned traitor, so they're trapped on the planet. So what's Arvida do? Turns out he's such a powerful psyker, he teleported a Primarch and his entire Ratune and himself onto a ship that was in orbit.
Yep.
Needless to say, after all this, the White Scars are big fans of Arvida. Big, big fans. They actually beg him to join the White Scars, and he won't. It's not that he's loyal to Magnus because he's not, but he's still like this is independent psyker.
Well, it also doesn't matter because like 8 seconds later, shit goes bad for him.
Yeah, well, it's so much funnier. So then Arvida's just this one, because this level of psyker he is nuts. So the White Scar fleet then, after they are able to fight it off.
I mean, in a thing, it's going to lead into what the Grey Knights are. This is going to be, I promise this has, I will tie this in. But one of the reasons I think that what's about to happen to Arvida happens is because of the fact that he's never been that close to the warp before. I'm super powerful. Mm-hmm. I was already powerful.
I'm probably overusing my powers.
Correct. Well, he's just, I've never been touching the warp and throwing down all this. And this is why I think he's so, I mean, in those stories, he's just unlimited emperor power just throwing out.
We're doing Eldred Ahriman. I mean, he's just like,
he's
wrecking things.
Launching. And and it's all in a short period of time. Mm-hmm. You know, usually people do psychics. I'm tired. I have to do stuff. He's ruining. Well,
that's actually good. We talked about the Thousand Suns cast. I mean, when they're on Prospero, he's fighting the demons. He's exhausted and still doing it, which, as we talked before, flesh curse. This is usually what brings out the flesh curse.
Your defenses are down. Your defenses against chaos are down.
And they're able to come in.
And this is one of the things that ties into the Grey Knights, because the Grey Knights know that this is a thing, and we're going to go into it just a little bit, but this does.
Exactly.
They see this though.
And so what happens next is, as Arvida and the White Scars are doing, is he starts to feel the flesh curse eating at him, but he's able to, with his like powers, keep it away. But it comes to a head because the White Scars, after dealing with their own little traitor legion inside, need to get back to Earth. And the only way they can get back there is to kind of jump through this portal that's going to take it back to Earth. And it never really explained why this portal is different than regular warp travel, but it's basically the best way I understood it was a trip from where they were to Terra via the warp should have taken a month or two, and these guys did it in 3 days.
Yep.
By taking the ultimate shortcut.
They went, we have to go through the second layer of hell. They're let's do it.
And so they do this with Arvida guiding the ship, because he's the one who says, I can see the Astronomicon. I can get us there. We can take this path. So they do. They jump.
Which, at the time, we've done the cast on this.
Yeah.
They are actively trying to obfuscate the astronaut.
Yeah, and so he forces them through what I assume basically went right next to the planet of chaos. I assume that's why this route was so short. Is it like
you literally rolled through and Zeech was like, dude, what the?
Yeah,
he's cooking lunch.
Yeah, like took the top off some of the buildings where they're like, what the hell was that? Like, you know, just doop. And so they get there. As soon as they arrive in Terra, the flesh curse just starts overtaking Arvida. And the White Scars start calling for help and saying, hey,
well, they this have guy, no idea.
Yeah, and namely Jagatai calling for help, saying, this guy is effectively saying, this guy's our hero. Save him, save him, save him. And of course, Malkador is waiting.
Yeah.
One of Malkador's agents comes on and does more Malkador stuff where he says, don't worry.
I got this.
We're going to treat him. We've got a treatment ready for him. Just take him back and they take him away. So as with all things Malkador, the treatment was pretty shitty. So jumping back, as we discussed before numerous times, but Magnus did nothing wrong. He did. When Magnus broke the Webway Gate
to send a message.
Yeah. In the basement of Terra, he opened a portal to the Immaterium,
which is bad. It's not just a portal. It's not like he went, hey, portal, what's inside? No, he punched through and opened a portal to what was innumerable hordes of chaos, which had been pounding at the.
Well, that's my interpretation of it, is that he punched a hole in between the Materium and the Immaterium, and the hole on the Immaterium side had a big Terra this way sign.
Well, but they had already, so, in the stories, while the Emperor's doing all this, the demons, have been gathering there, trying to get through. And the Emperor just being like, whatever, I don't care that you're there. I got this. Yeah. And then Magnus went, I got to talk to you. And the Emperor went, I
do not have the time. Send the voicemail. He found a way to punch through voicemail and go to speaker.
Yeah. He's like, hey, man. And then demons started.
Yeah. So needless to say, this portal needs closing. And Malkador had exactly the most Malkador plan for doing this.
Which is, hey, man, I know you're suffering one of the top three ways to die, most painful ways to die in the known galaxy. I've got you, brother. Come this way.
And so we talked in the last one really quickly about how Malkador sent the Knights Errant out to track down a bunch of shards of Magnus to make sure Chaos couldn't get them all, because it was important. And they failed every time.
No, they did not. There's one.
Well, that's the point. No, that's my point. He sent them all around the galaxy to collect them. And every time they went anywhere in the galaxy, they couldn't. They failed. But there was one more that was sitting in Terra in Malkador's pocket.
Yeah.
He had it the
whole time. I was just going to say, there's one.
Yeah, he had it the whole time. And Malkador's plan is to bind, is the term he used, shove this thing into Arvida, because he thinks doing so will actually turn Arvida into this, like, his own personal Magnus, effectively, that he would have control over.
Going to use him as putty to fix the hole.
Yeah, and then make this new, like, Malkador Magnus slave sit there and guard the gate for eternity. That was his plan. His plan was to punish Magnus for opening the thing by taking a shard of Magnus and making a version of Magnus guard it for eternity.
Oh, not even just guarding it. You have to fight every second of every day forever.
And I want to put up, Malkador in the literature referred to what he was going to create as an abomination that would stand against the forces of chaos.
Yeah.
This was a horrific plan. Malkador, of course, does it, and it just doesn't go well. I mean, Arvida, the entire room he's doing this in, the psychic energies are exploding, and Arvida is consumed by a psychic fire. But
Jagannath Khan shows up.
Yeah, Jagannath Khan, who loves Arvida and was like, hey.
Well, he just saved him like 10 times over.
Yeah, 10 times over. And he goes, what do you mean Malkador took him? And I think Jagannath Khan goes, that's not good.
It's never been good. There's never been a good time.
He is not being taken out to dinner. This is not a steak dinner. And
So Malkador took him. So they're having avocado toast?
Yeah, exactly. I'm on. You know, someone said, he was like, hey, what happened to Arvida? So I'm like, Malkador took him to some special place. And then Jagannath, before they got to finish the word place, went, I'm on my way, and jumped down there. Jagannath walks in the room and seeing just like Arvida being ripped apart by psychic energy.
It's not even just the fact he's being ripped apart. He's, as usual, having something way worse, which is he's having his soul set on fire.
Yeah, and they're screaming, and Jagatai does really what actually, to be fair, Lehman Russ would have done in this situation.
And just starts
breaking stuff in the room until the system stops. Because he has no idea what Malkador did.
He just starts punching everything.
Yeah, just starts breaking machinery until eventually it stops. Which is actually objectively hilarious, because it's just, you know, Malkador is just like, come on, stop. Oh, all right, fine. And at the end of it, Arvida's alive. He's just standing there. But the Shard of Magnus is still inside of him.
Yep.
And he is now one of the most powerful psychers in the galaxy.
He's also weird. You can read into it. They never tell you exactly the Aegeus. I really think that this is part of where they discovered how to make the Aegeus.
I wouldn't be surprised. I think you're going to be right. So what's
funny I got from this is they kind of went, oh, this guy is now resilient to chaos. How?
The only part of the story that gets a little bit weird to me is we're telling the story in a chronological sense here, but just so that this appears in codexes. So at the end of this, Arvida takes on the name Giannis, which is great. And then like two paragraphs later in the codex, he takes on the name Giannis because he becomes Giannis after this transition. He's no longer Arvida. He becomes a knight errant. And then like, I don't know, 2 weeks later, he's teleported to Titan and changes his name again. So I
also he had a really tough month.
Oh, it sucked.
The onboard process for being the Grand Master of the Grey Knights wasn't great. This HR was, I would put zero stars.
Yeah. So he's, what I actually don't know is if he got this treatment, but the rest of the other eight did. So that was fun. I just like that story. Now we're going to dive back into the Grey Knights more aggressively. And what we're going to talk about now is the change from being an Astartes to a Grey Knight, kind of the difference between the two. Now, there's two ways. These eight actually undergo a change, and then this change becomes the way all Grey Knights are made going forward. So, as we've said before, every single Astartes has the gene seed that mostly don't work.
Don't get me goddamn started.
By the way, the very first chapter of Space Marine 2, you get poisoned. It's like that fast.
So annoying.
I haven't gotten to a part of the game where it's too dark to see yet, but I assume it's coming. Anyway, so sorry, for those who don't know what we're talking about, listen to the Space Marine cast. Brad discovers contradictions in literature.
Four different organs.
So the challenge with the gene seed, though, is not only does it give you all these powers, but you're also genetically attached to your Primarch, both
psychically.
Yeah, and it creates a psychic bond. So probably better, given that half the founding members of the Grey Knights were from traitor legions. Let's clean this up a little bit. So they need to put in a new gene seed that's very powerful and endlessly loyal. So they just grab it from the Emperor himself. Everyone gets the gene seed of the Emperor, to which I assume you're all asking the same question I have, which is, why didn't they just always do that?
From the beginning?
Yeah.
Why? As opposed to giving them the wildly corrupted gene seed that they got from the Primarchs?
The Emperor went through the whole process of making Primarchs, and he could have just used himself, and
the
it
whole
probably
time?
Would have been better. And they would have been more loyal.
By the way, he's literally distilled version, pure as a mountain spring.
Yeah, there's no Horus heresy, So the big question is, with the Emperor's gene seeds, can they spit acid? Can Grey Knights does their organ work, Brad?
Are they immune to poison?
I don't think so.
They're not.
I've read that stories. Anyway, all I'm saying is it's not the Primarch that makes those organs not work. It's the organ that never worked in the first place.
Yep. But let's go into this. They are effectively impervious to chaos because they have the Emperor's, again, now it's Aegeus.
Yeah.
They have the Emperor's protection, and
Because they're getting a piece of the Emperor's soul effectively inside.
And weirdly enough, he actually is impervious to chaos.
Yeah, as he should be. That's probably pretty helpful. Although people who've read The End of Death understand what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying. He protects the galaxy. It was just an idea. And because of the fact that the Immaterium exists, and now it's reality.
So let's then dive into once they've moved there. So Grey Knights obviously don't have the ability to reproduce. So you can't build a legion of eight guys.
You can make the Expendables happen. Yeah. Though.
So what they did was they were these, we talk about the eight, these eight were teleported to Titan along with a few hundred thousand recruits, also known as psychically gifted children that Brad would have used as cannon fodder to stop.
This is never going to go down. This is never.
Because you have been using scouts as screens to enemy charges for 30 years.
I just did it 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. It's just, it's all you do.
They died so bad. Yeah.
The fortress also is completely full. It's literally millions of servitors, which is important because you needed this mindless and uncorruptible workforce to do two things. One, work in secret.
Whoa. I'm going to stop us on that because it's not just because they're mindless, uncorruptible. They're mindless, soulless beings. Oh,
yeah. Very good point. So no one knows they're there and have no way in.
They have no presence.
Mm-hmm. And which is important because the Grey Knights, while uncorruptible, you wouldn't want a situation where you've got, uncorruptible, space marines. And then.
Yeah, but Ted's next to
them. But 10 million servitors turn on them. And it's right. I just get tired at a certain point and the servitors win.
Well, also, I just turn everything off. Like, hey, I can't fight you in battle, but also I just turn the electricity off. Enjoy hanging out.
Yeah. So, and we're going to cover servitors very shortly when we get into AdMech. So don't worry. We're going to talk about that nightmare of the field.
Jesus.
Yeah. The Grey Knights also, we're going to talk about their armaments in a second, were outfitted with weapons and armor at this facility. The timing's here a little bit weird. I'm going to call this out. They talk about the Grey Knights having all this equipment, but then later on, the AdMech build a special moon for them. Mm-hmm. Right. I don't know if that was there.
What's happened first, the chicken or the egg?
I don't know, but because when Garrow was running through there, he saw all the new equipment, but then they call it out later. So if that sounds a little bit odd, I couldn't
figure it out. It changes the codexes, actually.
Exactly. So anyway, the eight founding members, they get to work immediately because the truth is they actually don't know much. They're just sent there and they're told you have to be a bulwark against humanity. And they don't know, do I have a week? Years, whatever.
Well, they have a
fine go time.
The weird thing is, they have a blueprint though. They have this is how you're going to be incorruptible to chaos.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, all I meant was they started on this.
But I'm saying that's all you get. You get this is how you do it. Well, what's the timeline? What are we supposed to do? Yeah, figure it out, man.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
The first thing they set forth is weeding out the new recruits who are sent to Titan. And much like with regular space marines, there's a process, except this one's a lot worse.
Dude.
Way worse.
Hold on. I'm getting, no one can see again, but I'm again gathering my chi. No. The space marines were like, the genes didn't come in. The organs didn't work. You died. It sucked. It was some pain. No. Becoming a Grey Knight from the marine was, things didn't work out for you. Your soul gets tortured forever and you die forever.
Well, they actually, it's worse than that because you don't get the soul tortured forever. You just, they kill you.
That's what I'm saying. But those are your options.
Oh, I see your point. Yeah.
They effectively just go, hey, let's see if you can stop demons from burning you for infinity. Also, when we kill you, there's a 50-50 chance that also Korn took you home and made you a rug. I mean, we killed your physical body, but your soul may be what he puts out as his welcome mat.
So let's go through this.
It's not great, dude.
Let's go through the stages. So first, the Grey Knight neophytes go through the same thing every neophyte goes through. Combat, survival, combat. That's what they're given. Great. So now we know this person can fight, and we already knew they were a psyker, but now we're going to work on your psyker abilities. And you need to be, we're pushing Eldar level psykers here. They need to be able to not just use the force. Oops. You have to not only use the warp as a weapon, but also as a tool. So teleportation, precognition, shooting lightning out of your hands, whatever it is,
it's all of them. But also, and at the same time, ready? Are you good at offense? The entire time you're doing this, we're going to try to destroy your soul.
Yeah, because that's
all the time.
That's the worst part because the phrase that exists all throughout 40K, it's a great phrase, is a moment of laxity spawns a lifetime of heresy. That is more true with Grey Knights than anything else because if a chaos got a hold of the Grey Knights, which by the way, we can prove later via Drago, they cannot. It's the best part of this.
I mean, it's just a big deal, honestly.
Yeah, they really are.
But they're subjecting you to, I'm not going to, you're effectively going, you can make it through this training or your soul can be destroyed.
Yeah.
And that's so, I just can't upsell this enough where the, you didn't make it through training isn't a, oh, you died, that sucks. It's a, oh, you may or may not exist on any plane ever,
yeah.
Or you're in an eternity of nightmares. It shit's going down here, man.
And these trials they put them through to kind of verify their ability to handle the warp and handle these things are 666 rituals of detestation, is what it's called. Why they chose the mark of the beast, I have no idea.
It should also be called desecration, but go ahead.
It's fine. I'm just assuming it's because someone at GW listens to Slayer, because in my mind, everyone should listen to Slayer.
Good concerts.
It's just a great band. Wonderful albums. Fun times. Anyway, it's only after passing all these trials that the neophytes actually would then advance to their final training, which is when they would get the gene seeds implanted of the Emperor and given a new name. Because as we said before, not only did the original eight get a new name, all of them get a new name. And this is because Chaos, especially Tzeentch, are masters of manipulation. They, if they know anything about you.
It's the thing. It's just like in any fantasy story, a true name means something.
Yeah.
So you have to, your true name has to be gone.
Yep. And it is removed. And so imagine if a Fate Weaver knew who your family and friends were. They just, it's like they would torment you. So it's impossible. These people, they effectively cease to exist and re-exist.
And it's a big deal on that. And the thing is that they do have, which I just thought about the fact of on the gate, on the table versus in the lore, they have equipment. I was going to say they have help. And then my brain hiccuped and I went, man, not on the board.
No, this equipment's incredible in the lore.
But it was in the, I was saying
the board, it's power armor. So first we'll go with the Grey Knight armor, which we're aware of. If you ever look at it, it's silver, which is one of the things that I didn't know till years ago. Someone told me they don't paint Grey Knight armor silver. All Astartes armor is originally this glinting silver. They then paint it to match the Legion.
Yep.
So the Grey Knight's armor is meant to be pure. So once manufactured, they don't touch it other than to put some runes on the inside of it.
Well, they put some. they sigil the shit out of their armor.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, exactly. They're covered in this. So this way, this makes this armor effectively, not only is it impervious. All right, so let me gather my excitement here before I get too uppity around how much I love Grey Knight armor. So the Grey Knight armor does not do this in the tabletop, but in the lore is incredible. It is covered in runes and wards, which do multiple things. First, it actually amplifies its wearer's psychic powers.
And it also makes you a bulwark against chaos.
Yeah, to the point where a Grey Knight wearing their armor in the warp is actually immune to the powers of the warp.
Yes, he's a pocket of go screw yourself.
Yeah, it is amazing. Now, do they get any benefit to fighting beings of the warp on the tabletop?
Absolutely not.
There we go.
They also have a random bolter.
The Sisters of Silence are significantly better against the demon than the Grey Knights are, who are meant to fight demons.
There are, we're selling this short though. The armor is it's a goddamn dwarven elven masterpiece from Tolkien. Every single armor should be an artifact effectively.
Same with their weapons though. Their weapons are specially, they're all effectively a regular weapon that they then put force energy into.
All of them are force weapons.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they noted make here. They're the Ghostbusters. I'm sorry. As I was doing the writing
made
for this.
It so less cool.
I know, but it is. They're basically carrying proton packs.
I mean, now you've ruined it for me.
Calling it out. Like, it is like, because what they have is they've got, you know, bolters, power swords, flamers, just like every other Astartes does. But then they've got a rune and ward all over it that just makes it anti-warp. So, for example, like the Nemesis weapons, which is just a code for power, for Grey Knight, Power Sword, Power Hammer, Power Halberd, whatever it is. But the wards on it make it so when you hit something that has chaos in it, it just blows them up.
I mean, for me, it's divine smiting stuff with paladins.
Yeah, but not, again, on the tabletop. Like, no. even mildly.
You should be able to divine smite. You should get an extra die of damage.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they should have it.
Especially
they should demons. Have Melta. It should be
into demons. Yeah, into demons.
It should be a Melta weapon.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. 1,000%. Yeah. Because it literally hits you with, I guess not divine because that would be a D&D type thing, but like it hits you with force, power, the anti-warp.
I mean, one of the ones I do like, I'll just touch on one of these a little bit, is the Psi Cannon, which is a bolt gun. But the gun itself has runes on it to make it more powerful against psychers. And then every single bolt that it shoots, and this is an automatic weapon, by the way, has a silver tip on it that's inscribed with anti-demon symbols, which I assume is just a middle finger.
It has legitimately magic sigils on it.
Which I'm pretty...
The servitors are really busy.
Correct me if I'm wrong here. Isn't that how the blade worked?
In 100%.
Yeah. So they are... Yeah, it's a blade.
And they've got a bunch of whistlers that are servitors.
Which, look, is Wesley Snipes good at paying taxes? No. No, he is not good at paying taxes.
Is he good at playing a daywalker?
God, the moves were incredible. Anyway, so that was just a fun thing. Now I want to jump a bit more into kind of the history of Grey Knights. So now let's kind of jump back into Grey Knights in, 40K lore. Malkador's spell that he cast that puts Titan into the warp. Titan emerges. It's within a couple of years because when Titan emerges, Gilliman is still on Terra when it reemerges, but no one knows.
It's so weird because, and this is why it's been written multiple times.
Yeah,
the time difference here, depending on who it's coming from, is a couple of years, thousands of years. It depends on who.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, which story you're reading, unfortunately.
It's which story, but also certain people just got left behind.
Yeah. What is humorous and terrifying about this is that when they do reemerge, as we said, 8 space marines and a few 100,000 recruits went in, 1,000 Grey Knights come out, which means they've got a borderline...
99% kill rate?
Yeah, this is borderline custode level turnover rate from recruit to space marine.
Also, again, custodes died. Grey Knights go, oh man, I hope your soul works out.
Yeah. And it is, this one's interesting because it's not really clear who in the Imperium fully knows what's going on. We know that, they become part of the Inquisition, but even this is a little bit secretive as to how much of the Inquisition's aware of them. Because Giannis was given full autonomy. He's got his own forge world making him weapons. He has his own fleet of ships. He can use and he's basically told, find warp problems, remove warp problems.
Gilliman went, I'm going to write the Codex Astartes. Are you guys going to pay attention to this?
Well, I don't think Gilliman knew they existed. That's the thing.
Well, they weren't there. Reads the Codex. When he writes the Codex Astartes, they're gone still.
It depends on the edition. Problem, because there's editions where they are back. Anyway, this whole part.
Either way, he doesn't write it for
that. And this is, to be candid, this is, I don't think this is a flaw in GW writing. I like it when GW does the, there wouldn't be imperial records of this, so why should we make it clear?
It's supposed to be mysterious, just like we talked Tyranids. About the assassins.
And the Tyranids, we don't know Tyranids' motives, right? Because we can't write
books. And I don't want to know them.
Oh, yeah, don't write me a, black library book from the perspective of a lictor,
I want to, I like the fact that we have no idea where this is from, it's shrouded in secrecy, because they were shrouded in secrecy.
One thing, though, that it's interesting is that they did emerge after the second founding. This is Gilliman's work. And the second founding is when Gilliman broke up the legions and said, look, we can't have full legions. Now you're going to have chapters. It makes it smaller. It makes it so that it's harder for something like a Horus Heresy to take place. So the Grey Knights end up because they come out of this. There's only 1,000 of them. The part of this that is humorous, though, is that the Grey Knights, because again, the Imperium is a bureaucracy, are still added into the records at Adeptus Terra in existence, but it's done in secrecy. You guys can't see me doing air quotes because I don't know what this meant. Like, is it that old ink you and I used to buy where you'd write a message and your friend would go over it?
This is my favorite thing because they say it's done in secrecy and the scribe went, sure. And then typed it in.
You just typed it in like, do I?
Is it invisible ink? And he literally put asterisks and went secret and then just pushed enter. And
do so not there's, read.
Yeah. There's just a list of everybody and Grey Knights are there and it just has a thing that says secret next to it.
They were also labeled as the 666th chapter of the Space Marines, despite there being only 400 chapters.
Yep.
Because again, everyone should listen to Slayer. These are just facts. So over the next 1,500 or so years, the Grey Knights and Inquisition, they wage a complete shadow war. Like, no one's even aware. There's no one who's aware of anything that's going on.
We'll do more about this, but they're not as big of a dick as the Inquisition, but they're pretty close. I said they're not as big.
That's true. I mean, the problem is that they
at least have heroic stories. The Inquisition's almost always.
Well, because the Inquisition, the heroic story is sending the Grey Knights.
Yeah. True.
Although the problem is the Inquisition also sends the Grey Knights after the fact. So where this becomes dark is the Grey Knights jump all around the galaxy to fight demonic incursions, and they put them down. And then right after they're down, the local populace walks over to high-five them. They kill the whole populace.
Yeah, no one has more collateral damage. That's what I said. The Inquisition is the only person that
has more. And what ends up happening is
because they bomb planets.
Well, that's true. Yeah. The Grey Knights become effectively a myth, but like not in a good way, like a horror myth. Because what you get is, you know, people will see, it's more of an ominous, they'll see a gray fleet on the edge of a world that experiences, in heavy air quotes here, a natural disaster, because that's what it would be labeled as. Other times people arrive on a planet that's been that somehow is built by humans, but there's not a human to be found anywhere. And they'll find like paintings on walls of silver men stabbing like creatures.
Let me give it. We haven't given one yet.
Go.
To be fair, they're shitty at this.
Oh,
they never, ever, ever kill everyone. They always miss.
They always miss someone.
A shit ton.
Yeah.
It's not even someone. There's not like one guy.
Yeah.
They miss entire people. Just go, I'm just going to go underground. And like, and they'll never, their big asses will never find me. Yeah. And they don't. And they just go, whatever. We killed most of them deuces and just move on with their lives. Like, now, if we don't feel good about this planet, we'll just have an Inquisitor virus bomb the planet.
What we'll do now is try to not have Brad shake in his chair for the next 5 or 10 minutes while we go through this.
Okay.
The secrets of the Grey Knights were actually kept from everybody, by the way. So when we talk about them, it's not only is it the citizens of the Imperium, but even the Astartes aren't aware that there's another chapter of Astartes.
Yes and no, kind of.
Yeah, well, no, it was. And
yeah,
it goes the other way, which we'll get to in a minute.
Well,
let's talk about the good they did before we talk about the
bad. I was going to say, certain Primarchs have things because the Primarchs have their own spies.
It's quite likely Gilliman knew about it.
He knows about everything.
Yes, that's why. But there's a lot of other ones I'm not sure. But let's dive into. We're going to take a left turn on Grey Knights being horrible people in a minute. But I want to open up with some of the good things they did because some of them are actually pretty cool. So
they rock sometimes.
Yeah. So we'll start
they're paladins, but they're paladins of vengeance. Yeah. So
one of the ones I liked is there's a demon named Zorgar the Cruel, which is actually a pretty good naming mechanic. The Grey Knights go there and to kill him. And because Zorgar's got a cult spread across multiple worlds.
I mean, I'm probably going to go kill someone that's name is Zorgar the Cruel.
So, but the problem is that they kill Zorgar. And the second they kill him, he reincarnates in the body of one of his followers. The Grey Knights spend 12 years killing Zorgar over close to 1,000 times until they finally get to the last cultist that he's on, and they kill him and that cultist and remove him. I like that because that's how this is. The Grey Knights are determined. When they're coming for you, this was off over 1,000 times over hundreds of worlds, they chased down Zorgar the Cruel until they were convinced he was all the way gone.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
Another one that's a little bit more traditional for them is there's an Agri world where a demon has possessed an overseer, for lack of a better phrase, of the Agri world. Kill him and discovers that the overseer was putting in chaos taint into corpse starch, which doesn't feel like it would be that hard to do.
Yeah, but also he was sending it everywhere.
Yeah.
Because Agriworld's, again, this isn't like a farm that makes some wheat. This is a planet that has been terraformed to make something.
So then the Grey Knights do what Grey Knights do in this situation. They kill him and they go and exterminatus every planet that received a shipment.
It's not they kill the planet. They go, I guess we'll kill everywhere that ever got touched by it.
Yeah.
What? So like one guy got a freaking protein bar on the planet. You're like,
yeah, some guy in the administratum got asked, hey, we need to know every shipping route that left this planet in the last like 5 years. Yeah. I goes, okay. And then he's probably dead because what he handed over, every one of those planets no longer exists.
Yep.
Back to more of a badass story. It's a guy named Captain Edion?
Brother
Captain Edion, who was sent off, and this story is awesome. This is why I really do like, between this and Drago is why I love Grey Knights. Edion is sent to go kill a demon fex, which I actually don't know what that is, so sorry. But anyway, he chases them into the bottom of the galaxy known as the Veiled Region, because I'm not saying south anymore. It's the bottom. Edion goes down there, kills the demon fex, and just communication stops. They never hear from him again. And the Grey Knights go, oh, okay, he must have failed, and he's dead.
No. He gets placed at the table. You know what? I'm going to give a couple people that will have so few people. He Talanamas's this. That would be from Steven Erikson's Malaysian.
You're so excited about something. I have no idea what you're talking about.
I know, but it's people that know. There's going to be very few people that know what I'm talking about. The people that know what I'm talking about are going to be super.
You're going to start doing this cast in Latin next. Like, see how small an audience we can get down to.
I'm trying to really focus down.
Congratulations.
We haven't hit everybody that I want to hit.
Good God. Today's cast is going to be in Aramaic. All right, but fine.
It's a whole race of people that went, we're going to make ourselves basically undead so that we can forever try to kill you. And this is what he does. Though.
Well, Edion's, no, he's.
Well, he doesn't turn it down. I'm saying, but he just goes,
I'm doing this.
You went here. Oh, you think I won't follow you? Yeah. Nope. I'll do this forever. Yeah.
So we're going to fast forward 2,000 years. Edion reappears in the galaxy because it turns out he chased this demon fex into a pocket dimension of the warp. Killed it hundreds upon hundreds of times. So for 2,000 years, he just kept chasing the demon fex and stabbing it. And then when it get back up, he stabbed it. Because as we said before, if you're in the warp and you try to kill like a demon prince in the warp, the gods of chaos can just revive you.
Immediately.
And Edion and the Grey Knights just kept killing this demon fex so many times that the gods of chaos just gave up and said, fine, it's dead now.
He legitimately groundhog dated until they were just like, okay, you completed the day.
Good God. And he warps back into reality. But upon reaching reality, you know, their bodies age instantly. I mean, they
went from 0 to 2,000 in one day.
Yeah, in one day. And so all Edion and them realize they're dying. So what does he do? He sends a message to Titan. Mission accomplished. That's all he sends. And they get this and they go, oh, so that is a hero of heroes in my mind.
That's also a big dick move.
Yeah. But unfortunately for them, we're now going to jump into a story that's going to make Brad really happy. And the Grey Knights really, because truthfully, people keep begging for Space Wolves and we need to do them, but I need all the codexes first. So let's do this. War of Armageddon.
Oh!
As we said before, there is a Angron attacks Armageddon.
First war.
This is the very first one. Well, not the first one because Ulanor came first. But anyway.
I'm just saying.
Since it was named Armageddon. You're talking
about the Armageddons.
Again, why would you live on the planet Armageddon? Anyway.
Nothing has ever happened good
here. It's just never good. So anyway, Grey Knights and World Eaters are engaging on this battle. The citizens of Armageddon are incredibly tough. They hold up. But the Space Wolves get brought into this battle because they happen to be nearby when the distress call comes out. So Space Wolves are fighting and the Grey Knights appear, who the Space Wolves do not know exists, by the way. They all fight together and they push back and actually defeat the forces of chaos.
Look, this is a big deal because it's not they just fought together. The forces of Armageddon, the regular people are heroically making last stands just against
Angron.
Yeah. I mean, we're not literally talking, demons of Korn.
They weren't fighting cultists. They were fighting berserkers, Angron, you know,
just full on demons. They're fighting the forces of Korn. Yeah.
Bloodletters, the thing. And it's just people.
Yeah.
And so it ends. And what ends up happening is the Space Wolves are doing what they always do post battle. Let's have a big feast and let's all high five because how awesome we are.
Yeah.
And they look over and the Grey Knights just start executing civilians. And it's like, no. So they have an argument. This is argument one, at which point the Grey Knights and the Inquisition start having a conversation with the Space Wolves about, well, look, we can't let them know about it. And the Space Wolves are saying, well, no, they're heroes of the Imperium. So they settle on this plan.
And let's back up on this. Space Wolves are huge about honoring heroes, the sagas.
These are incredible members of the Imperium.
Well, their whole thing is their stories are told by their scalds. They have their histories.
What ends up happening next is not ideal. While they're having this conversation, some of the people of Armageddon realize they're about to all get murdered.
Because they told them, and then
start hopping on ships to jump off world. As their ships get into orbit, the Grey Knights attack and blow the ships up. To which the Space Wolves don't think this is cool at all.
Well, specifically, the Space Wolves, but led by...
We'll get to him in a second.
Because this
gets a lot uglier. So immediately, the Space Wolf fleet moves over towards the Grey Knights. And the Grey Knights say, don't worry, let's parlay and let's have a chat. As soon as the Grey Knight fleet gets closer, as soon as the Space Wolf fleet gets closer, the Grey Knights open fire and actually blow up four of the Space Wolf ships and encircle the rest. And now say, we will accept your surrender now.
Grey Knights on this, but they're lucky because the Space Wolves go, explain what the shit is going on.
Well, yeah, this is the best part, I think, of all of this. So needless to say, you just fought next to the Space Wolves. You just killed a bunch of heroes, you just killed a bunch of people the Space Wolves thinks are heroes. And then you just killed the Space Wolves. And now you're effectively telling the Space Wolves, because what the Inquisition would do here, we will now accept your surrender. The part of this story I was holding back, because I think it's a fun one to drop now, is the Space Wolves are being led here by Logan Grimnar.
Yeah, he's not super excited about what
Logan just went down. Grimnar carries a grudge.
Understated that one small.
Logan Grimnar is Leman Russ part deux.
Yeah.
Just calling him what it is.
So Logan, what's his move? By the way, this is such a big D move.
Logan, I firmly believe whoever was in the head of the Grey Knights, who by the way was the Grand Master Grey Knights, didn't know who Logan Grimnar was. Because he tells him, come to the bridge and we will discuss this. So Logan accepts his offer and teleports to his bridge. And I laugh at this because I'm convinced there was some member of the Inquisition who's hearing this communication happen and hears the head of the Grey Knights saying, come onto the bridge and we'll discuss it. And then hears Logan Grimnar's voice saying, I'm on my way. And him yelling, no.
So,
because
Logan, he shows up with his personal retinue.
Yeah. And immediately, you know, he's there to surrender. Joros, who is on this ship, who is the current Grand Master of the Grey Knights, is standing there. And Logan just starts screaming at him, like, who the F attacked my fleet? And just won't listen to a word. He just keeps screaming that till Joros says, I ordered it. And then Joros discovers what a Power X feels like. Grimnar literally cuts Euros in half with a Power X, teleports back to his ship, and boogies out of system. Which then gets worse for the Grey Knights.
Yeah. Because then he takes it as a personal offense and goes, yeah, hey, if you have something on your calendar, cancel it. You know what we're doing? We're killing the shit out of these dudes in silver armor.
Yeah. And Logan then begins taking his fleet and jumping all around the place, looking for Grey Knight ships, and blows them up. We're going to get more into this into the Space Wolf cast, but I just want to put out this.
He does give an impassioned speech, though, before he kills everybody on the fact that the people of Armageddon were heroes and how dare they, basically.
Yeah, but
it's a cool story. Read it.
I do like that Logan Grimnar took a Power Axe and killed Euros with it on Euros' own ship.
Yeah. And then he also did the Achilles and gave is there no one else? Yeah.
And everybody's like,
dude, I'm really busy right now. I would fight you, but I have some stuff to do.
The lack of no eye contact he got after doing that is remarkable.
It's like, I don't even know who that guy was. Yeah.
And this is, I like this story because this affect actually how the Grey Knights function going forward. And I do believe this is because at this point, the Grey Knights were this incredibly powered chapter that could do whatever it wanted. It would just exterminate us people, blah, blah, blah.
They were bullies, though.
They were. And then they fought someone who could hit back. And the Space Wolves, this war between this, it became a civil war between the two of them.
But I think this was better for the Grey Knights because the Grey Knights eventually decided to be better because of it.
Exactly. This changed the Grey Knights. They actually looked back on it. Their behaviors post-Armageddon were much more not just into destroying the Force of Chaos, which is never going to change, but also to preserving the Imperium.
Well, they were they went from just I kill Chaos to I protect the Imperium by killing Chaos. And that's a big difference.
It's a massive difference. They were more Inquisition, I think, up until Armageddon.
100%.
It was just.
But I also think that's a problem is they didn't have the leadership. The leadership was the Inquisition. Yeah. The Inquisition's a bunch of assholes. I'm sorry, we already did the cast about it. Go back. They're dicks.
Yeah.
And the thing is they were led by dicks. If you're led by dicks and you end up being a bully, you're going to be a bully,
man.
No
one's surprised.
And that's the thing is that they finally went, we met real heroes. Maybe we should be heroes also. Yeah.
So after giving you the fun story that's crapping on them, let's give the greatest story that exists for the Grey Knights, which is Drago.
Drago, my man. Also, watch that on YouTube. It's amazing.
Yeah. Also, sorry for people who play him on the tabletop.
Compared to him, oh my God.
Is
he the most?
In the Imperium, I think he would be. We've talked about this before as far as like Terminators, all this stuff.
Terminators and Custodes are.
But Drago's the worst because Drago is. And okay, no, let's do a story.
Let's just do Drago.
We'll let you guys decide should this character even have a model in the game?
You know what? 40K? I'm going to do it in Discord.
So let's start into Drago. So Drago's first claim to fame was just while he was a battle brother, he was fighting a demon prince named Imkar the Reborn,
who was legit.
Yeah. Yeah. But also the second part, he's going to come up again.
Don't really get the reborn moniker.
Yeah. So as just the battle brother, he just banishes him. That's the first mention of Drago. Drago, though, later becomes Grandmaster because of Mortarion. And we're going to tell you a story now where you're like, wow, Drago's a badass. Nope. Wait till part two. This is adorable.
Yeah. This is him stretching out.
Yeah. So Drago, Mortarion, and the Death Guard have returned to the galaxy. They're fighting an area called the Karanvin, I don't care, sector. And the Grey Master of the Grey Knights at the time named Geronatan, in secret, is massing a bunch of Grey Knights to go undo this invasion by the Death Guard and, of course, by Nurgle. They hide, they wait for the perfect moment, and in that battle, Mortarion just kills him. Just simply put, just kills him, and the Grey Knights have to retreat.
He wrecks them, by the way.
It is this whole thing. I laugh. You're reading it like, oh, they masked in secret for a surprise attack and blah, 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 blah. And then the next line is, and Mortarion kills him. The Grey Knights retreat, and Drago is now elevated to supreme commander of the Grey Knights. But the way that the Grey Knights do it, he's actually transferred. When you become the supreme commander, they transfer knowledge to you. And so Drago gets all of the knowledge of Jorana Titan.
Are we not going to talk about this at all? Because this is 1,000,000,000% stolen technology from Phoenix Lord Armor.
Oh, yeah. So. Oh, no, it's the same thing Phoenix Lords do. Oh, completely do it. Yeah, it's not even close. Like, this is lazy writing. But what happens is he learns the original name of Mortarion, the one that the Emperor had for him when he was in the vat. Not because Mortarion was, that's the name Nekair gave him. So the next time they go to fight, Drago basically runs up to Mortarion and uses his fucking powers to blast what they call about kind of like a hole in Mortarion's shield.
Well, he does a full banishment on him.
And then speaks his name into Mortarion, which drops Mortarion to the ground. At which point, Drago walks over to the corpse of Mortarion, pulls his heart out of his chest, demon heart, and carves the name Jorana-ton in his still beating heart, which causes Mortarion then, of course, to die and warp back in. But there's now a scar on his heart forever that Drago put there. That's not the badass story of Drago.
also true.
Yeah. Next, we're going to jump ahead, and Drago Emkar the Reborn has been reborn.
What?
I know. How'd that ever happen?
Crazy talk.
And Drago again kills him. But in killing him, he kills Emkar was leading a demonic ritual to create a giant portal to the Immaterium. As Drago and the Grand undo it, he basically literally Emkar grabs Drago and just throws him into the Immaterium.
He curses him.
Yeah, he curses him and throws him in the
He curses material. Him. It's actually a pretty complex curse. It's like, because he's allowed to come back. There's a, as all devil curses.
Yeah, you know? There's a bunch of stuff.
There's a bunch of stip.
Honestly.
It's supposed to be a quick thing that happened, but it's also like a weird, long devil contract because Drago's allowed to come back when there's still demons in the Immaterium, but when the last demon's killed, he has to go back to the Immaterium.
Yeah, I don't care about that. What I care about is what Drago does. So Drago effectively gets thrown into the Immaterium, is stuck there, goes on a, I'm going to kick ass and chew bubble gum. And you know what they don't make in the warp? Bubble gum.
And I love that this is his first thought. He goes, let me open up a gate. Gate won't open? Well, bunch of you guys are going to get your asses kicked.
And he goes to every single realm of chaos and just puts a beating down.
To their home part.
He goes to the realm of Khorne. There's a bloodthirster named Karvoth. And just kills him, mano a mano, grabs his battle axe, walks down to like the magma, melts the battle axe, because I forgot to mention that Drago broke his sword earlier and makes himself a new sword.
Yeah.
Out of a bloodthirster's battle axe.
And random lava in the realm of Khorne is like, I'll be right back.
And then walks over the mountain, which we've discussed before are meant to be impenetrable. Just walks the mountain, ends up in Nurgle's garden, which he looks around and just goes, all right, lights the whole thing on fire.
Well, no, you're not selling it enough. Drago gets infuriated by the corruption of Nurgle.
Yeah.
And his fury at the corruption sets fire to Nurgle's garden.
And the fire is so large that the entirety of the realm of chaos can smell the burning of Nurgle's garden. He then wanders over to Slaanesh, in which case Slaanesh sends his 6 best demonettes to tempt the Drago with, you know, power, glory, riches, all normal things. All 6 are dead and had their bodies scattered across the plains of Slaanesh by Drago. He doesn't write go F yourself, Slaanesh, but he kind of does
because he poses all of them.
Yeah. And then the last one he does is he wanders into the realm of Tzeentch, in which he's a Lord of Change, starts offering him all these things. I can get you back into the Materium, just listen to me. And while he's talking, Drago just goes, no, and pulls a wall down.
It's better. Yeah. Because the Lord of Change tries to corrupt the same way I can bring you back and everything. Drago goes, let me think about that for a minute. Or I can just topple this mountain on your face and I'm just going to roll out. Also, doesn't effectively, he's dead, but not dead. He leaves him under a mountain of rubble and just goes, deuces. Yeah,
deuce, you're out. And this is the best part. After doing this little like tour de ass kick, the beings of the warp just kind of accept Drago's there and don't make eye contact and avoid him, except for the occasional corn, which is fine. Bloodthirsty.
Because they have to.
Yeah, I'm going to be the greatest champion. And everyone goes, yeah, man, have fun. And then just gets.
Everybody else just legit leaves him alone.
Drago wanders the warp and with demons running out of the way just for unknown thousands of years. To which then leads to the part that I actually find even better. So Cadia falls and the rift goes across the galaxy, at which point Drago discovers he can actually walk out of the Immaterium now, but he still has that curse on him. So Drago just starts appearing randomly whenever the Grey Knights are fighting and in trouble. Drago will just appear and win the battle for them.
And like, beat the shit out of everybody and then just take off.
Yeah, but then he has to go back. And the reason I like this story is that Drago lives in the Immaterium and is still the Grandmaster of the Grey Knights.
And they have not appointed a new
Grandmaster. They're not replacing him because the version they get of him is like, this, I don't think it gets better than this.
Yeah.
The gods of chaos are afraid of our Grandmaster.
They're trying to figure out how we can break it. Can we just get this guy gone?
They want, I guarantee you, the gods of chaos are working overtime to undo the curse. If they can, if they may reborn M'Karn again to say, hey, fix this. We can't have a nice time. I'm trying to sit on my porch, look off on my garden or whatever I've got in front of me and enjoy my day. And Drago's coming and we all have to go inside and shut the doors like an old Western, you know, where the criminals wandering into town. So needless to say, on the tabletop, Drago has a 2-up save.
2-up, 3-up.
2-up, 3-up. That's it. He's fine.
He might be the worst from Lord Saber,
but he should single-handed Bellicor.
Yeah, but he also should cost 2,000 points.
Oh, yeah, just like, that's the flip side. That's probably why he's not. So anyway, it's kind of a cliffhanger to drop you guys in, but that's kind of, when I think about Grey Knights, this is how I think about them. I think about it from the standpoint of like, they've got the army of the demons, them and the Space Wolves didn't get along, but Drago's amazing. I hope you guys, this was enough to kind of cover it for you. On the next cast, we're going to start something new. We've been asked for a lot of times about Sisters and AdMac and Drukhari and all stuff. And I realized that the three darkest factions in the entire game are AdMac, Sisters, Drukhari. So we're just going to do them back to back to back. So the next cast, we're going to start with AdMac and discuss kind of this is what AdMac are and let you guys decide, are they the worst things to mortal life? And then we'll do Drukhari or Sisters and then the other one and you can decide which is the worst.
I guess we're just going to never have fun again.
Yes, yeah, going to be. You can have some fun with them a little bit, but not really.
I mean, things are bad.
It's real bad. They're horrid. But anyway, this has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you guys next week.